It's Wednesday, June 30th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 196 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 5 minutes.
Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
My name is Pat.
And this is Chris.
We are mourning the passing of a friend. Since May of 2006, over 4 years ago, when Fear the Boot got started, this show has been recorded on a Dell XPS computer, and she finally gave up the ghost, and unfortunately ate the original episode 196. We recorded one with Johan guesting for Chad.
He is a mother.
He was, and he was again, and it was a great episode.
It was.
And it is destroyed.
You know, and the funny thing was, he was talking about how now that he's been on a couple of episodes, he's on par with this person or that person, and not anymore.
Yeah, nope. that comic got him bitch slapped right down.
Well, and we keep trying to record the cursed episode, the cursed topic.
We have been trying.
I warned you all.
You did.
Pat did. No, we don't know, because when you warned us, the episode got eaten.
The two unthinkable things happened in the episode that was lost. One, we actually talked about the topic of animal familiars, and that's lost. Two, Pat gave a monologue about why we shouldn't talk about it.
Yep.
Pat monologued, and that's lost.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Pat.
In the interest of sparing this computer, I think we're going to have to ice that topic longer.
Yeah.
Even though we actually got a really good discussion out. But anyway,
cool down a bit.
Okay.
Let the gypsy curse wear off.
The final epilogue thought on our fundraiser for Reina's Wings this year, the donations are in.
Wow, what a freaking great community we have.
Oh, yes.
I cannot even believe it.
And the closing thought I want to give is I also want to thank the RPG companies that were very supportive of this. We had Arc Dream, Polymancer, RPG Drive-Thru, which also through their network then got us several other groups, including Pinnacle, Fat Dragon. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but what I did...
Because you're a bad host.
Well, that's right.
Where's your numbered list now?
Yeah.
It's actually in a blog post. What I did do was I noted all the companies that had supported us and the products with which they had supported us. And I put this in a sort of open letter, which I will link off the show notes. It's also on the front page blog. So if you guys are out there looking for a new game or something, I hope you will consider looking at these companies and their products, because these are people who have shown they've got a great interest in what we're doing here at Fear the Boot, and they've got a great interest in causes like the March of Dimes. So these are good people putting out good stuff. So I hope you'll take a look at that and at least click through and look at the products they've got. If it's your thing, pick them up. If it's not, you know what? That's just the way the cookie crumbles. But these are really great guys. And so I hope you get out there and show them some love. Chris?
Dan?
The episode that we did get out, the one with Dave, during that show...
You put a picture of me with a silly hat on Facebook, you cack.
Yes, I did.
Damn, that's an awesome hat.
It is hat day on Fear of the Boot.
It is hat day.
As all of the people that are my friends on Facebook know.
All right. Nice. So let's play a little bit of game of geek trivia.
Uh-huh.
If it's hat day, then why is only one of the five of us wearing a hat?
Because you guys suck.
Because Chad stole the only hat.
All right, Chad's wearing...
No, there's another hat right up there, but that's the John hat. I don't think anyone but John can wear that one.
Chad's wearing a hat that is from a Halloween costume I have.
I was at that party, so I'm abstaining from this.
It's a... Not quite a top hat. It's sort of top hat, but it's shorter than like a stovepipe top hat would be. Mm-hmm. And then I wear that with sort of like Victorian looking clothes.
I'm
and
looking
a long
at it right
coat.
Now.
Okay. And the guy that I'm dressing up as is someone called the Ragman. Does anyone know who the Ragman is?
Do not.
You know, I should. It sounds really familiar, but no.
It was a villain in the game Sacrifice. He was a well-dressed gentleman that would come to children in their nightmares and kill them.
Well, that's
and
happy.
Aptly fits Chad.
So anyways, Chris, getting back to different form of child abuse.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm sitting here distracted by steampunk Chad's picture with the hat and the...
You bitch.
You did not just...
Oh, I don't make
with
me
the
come
hat,
up there.
With the hat and the way he's got the headphones on and the glasses and the look on his face, I don't know. He's got this little steampunkishness going on.
Chris... Do you think
Are you calling me a dirty hipster?
He's not insulting you. He's insulting me. You think I would make a costume that's so played out that I would do either steampunk or what a lot of people think when I wear it, a vampire? I mean, this is just...
No, I've liberated the hat. It's the way in which it fits, Chad, is what
I'm talking
about. Actually,
the way now you have your headsets, it's like earmuffs. So anyway, Chris, we did have a topic here.
Yes.
No.
Let's stop talking about things people can't see.
In the episode we got out with Dave, we on this show took our own advice and applied it to a problem. And this is something that you are also doing in your life with a completely different issue that I think would be really neat to talk about, which is your quest for a gaming group. Because as I've said in prior episodes, probably the number one type of email I get is somebody writing in saying they're isolated out in the middle of nowhere, don't have a lot of gamers around them, don't have any gamers around them, whatever the story is, but they don't have a gaming group, and our show, they feel, is a great way of still enjoying the hobby without a gaming group. And Chris, you moved from Minnesota to Waterloo, Iowa, moved away from all your friends. Apparently, for some reason, the moving truck broke down before you got to St. Louis, where the rest of your friends are, and you just decided to squat land or whatever.
He likes corn. Iowa, you know.
Yeah. Irishmen are good at that. So you just squat some land in the middle of the Midwest, and you did not have a gaming group.
No.
So, Chris, you took the advice we have given in previous shows, including you have given in previous shows, and put it to use. And I'd love to hear about this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was, I'd kind of reached that point where there's this threshold where you bitch about not having a group to game with. And then when you pass that threshold, that's when you actually finally do something about it. When you realize that a group is not going to show up on your front door with dice in a box and a DM screen and say, let's go game.
And to put this problem in perspective, describe Waterloo, Iowa.
Waterloo, Iowa, and the town of Cedar Falls are basically right on top of each other. And maybe they're a metro area of around, we'll say about 90,000 people. It's not huge, but it's also not small. So the possibility of finding a group does exist. I mean, there are two comic book stores, and there's been D&D days. And so I've been around gamers, but there just hasn't been that effort for me to really go and try and find somebody. So being tired of that fact and wanting to go and see what I could do, the first tactic I took was I made up some flyers. And rather than just, you know, scrawl something on a note card or whatever, I made a nice looking flyer, put a little bit of effort into it, and brought it to both stores, put contact information on there, and said I was looking for a group. They agreed to help, you know, put the flyer up in the store. And, you know, so there's one avenue.
Which on the surface seems kind of backward to me, because the few times that I've been in a gaming store or a bookstore and really paid attention to the bulletin board, I have seen people soliciting for gaming groups. But typically it's the other way around. It's a gaming group looking for players, or it's a GM trying to start a game and looking for players. It's not a lone player looking for a group to join.
Right. And that's exactly what I was doing. And I made sure to sell that aspect of myself. Obviously, you know, in your own group, you're always going to be very, very selective about any new people that you're going to try and let in there. You know, you're picky. You can usually afford to be picky. So I had to make sure, when I made that flyer, that I sold myself well, you know, wrote down the fact that I was a veteran, wrote down the versatility.
What war?
And, yeah,
well, the Crimean?
It was the Great Edition Wars of 1992.
The Punic War.
Yeah. So, but then I survived the RPG collapse from the CCG invasion in 93. That was what...
Yeah.
But
it was a rough time.
Carthage used to be a part of Ireland.
But also, in my particular case, since I enjoy GMing, I wrote that down because if there's anything that is even harder to find than a group, it's harder to find someone who's out, you know, would always be willing to run something. So put that point in there as well.
And Chris, there's something I want you to send me, because during the original take of this episode a week ago, I was giving you a little bit of crap for this flyer you'd put together. Until you Wayne did. Actually handed me his phone with a copy of this flyer pulled up. And I
yeah,
because
I saw it on Facebook and I was blown away. It is impressive.
I got to say, you actually made a really damn good flyer.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was. It took a little bit of effort, and it did help that I got some Photoshop skills, but I was able to put a little, you know, niceness to it to actually make it realize that, oh, okay, this guy probably is not some sort of hack. So that was one tactic I took. The other tactic was, we have a pretty good sized university here in the area. I looked up their student organizations on there, found an anime organization, contacted them to see if they had any gaming contacts.
You don't
which
want
they did.
That kind of gaming. As an anime fan and a role player, let me just tell you, run.
He wouldn't get it anyway. It's not allowed within 100 yards of a school. So.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
The funniest thing about this is, as you mentioned all this, Chris, Pat is sitting here glowing red, trying to keep from laughing because something you said has spurred him into comedic gold that he won't share with us.
It didn't have anything going away. It was just a mention of the university. Yeah. Yeah. This is a spot of undigested meat.
But
there's more of gravy to grave than. All right.
Yeah.
But the one tactic that ended up working was actually the one which I honestly did not think would. I thought I would have a much better chance with the flyers, really, more than anything else. But what ended up working for me is I went to one of the little gamer dating sites or gamer hookup sites, penandpapergames.com, and saw that there was a number of other registered gamers, you know, in my area, but a lot of them really hadn't logged on in years, myself included. I never necessarily went there.
I said, I thought you guys are required to update your location on a yearly basis.
You do have to check in with your parole officer every now and again, but as long as you got good behavior, they might let things slide here and there. So just as a shot in the dark, I basically sent a message to a handful of these guys in the area explaining the fact that I'm looking for this. And sure enough, I got a response from someone who I realized had also just recently signed up. And so he and I started communicating. And then one other angle I had pursued was somebody that I work with. Her boyfriend also was a gamer, and so I kind of worked that angle as well. And now between the three of us, and he had people on his side, we've actually got the nucleus of a group forming, and we're getting ready to actually sit down and have our first session next week. And right now, it's kind of funny because we're all communicating via email right now, so none of us have ever really seen each other. I mean, I've seen the one guy who I know now through that person at work, but we still don't really know each other. So it's we're kind of in this funny, sorry, Pat, feeling out kind of stage where we're just trying to get used to who everybody is. And it's going to be really interesting when we sit down next week and start to actually go. And it looks like there's somebody who's going to run something. They've got what they want to do. And, you know, in a beggars can't be choosers thing, he wants to do 4E. And so I'm kind of stuck in that. I don't necessarily want to do that. But, you know, that's fine. Hey, you know, I'll play because here's an opportunity to play and then maybe change things down the line.
And I'm tired of the addition debate. That's Chris at FearTheBoot.com if you're a 4E fan.
It has nothing to do with the addition. I just don't have the desire to do that.
This is the gaming equivalent of a blind date.
It is a little bit like a blind date.
Chris, here's the moral of the story that I want people to take home. Now, first off, we're going to go into the show notes and post a copy of your flyer, and I'll also post a link to the hookup site that you used. And there are lots of meetup sites or hookup sites like that on the internet. If you go out into Google and type in gamer meetup or whatever, and just start Googling the right terms, you can find tons of sites like this. But the real moral I want to give here is, with all the techniques you tried of putting out the flyers, going to the game store, talking to like-minded individuals, checking in with the local universities, the fact is, as I go through these emails where people write in and say, I'm the only gamer in my area, there are no other gamers out here, I'm in the middle of farm fields, and Chris, you're surrounded by cornfields pretty much as far as the eye can see.
Absolutely.
There are no gamers here. And I'll go back through my emails like, yeah, you're from this town. 2 weeks ago, I got a letter from a guy in that town. Month before that, I got a guy from that town. And here's the point, is that I'm not saying everyone within the sound of my voice has gamers in their town. You very well may not. But what I would like to encourage each of you to do is, if you have the time for the hobby and simply are not participating in it because you think you are isolated, don't think you are isolated, go find out for sure. Because there is a very good chance you will be pleasantly surprised to learn there are 5, 10, 15, 100 other people within driving distance of your house who feel they are in the exact same situation, and you guys just aren't making that connection for whatever reason. So get out there. Even if there's no game store, check the schools, check the libraries.
Check the alleys, check the bars, the crack houses, the whorehouses, the opium dens.
Check the board game meetup groups.
Check the board game meetups.
Those people hate role players.
Not all of them. Yeah, but you know what, though?
Yeah, including people like you, Chad.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so the board...
They're probably going to know, though, some of those kind of people that they won't necessarily associate with.
So the first, game, push you the in first direction. Time I went to them.
So the board game meetup group that I go to at the end of each month, they have to share the space with a very large, very loud, very raucous D&D group. And they're always, like, leaning in and going, oh, my God. I hate those role players. They're so loud. And I lean in and I go, I know, I can't stand role players. They're just so nasty.
You know, it is funny.
The funny thing is, I go to the same group on a different day. And my first time there, one of the guys is like, yeah, I'm thinking about getting a role playing group together. You know anyone that's not in a group? And they have this whole conversation going on about it. When Chad goes in, they hate role players.
Yeah, well, that's because there's a D&D group going on. I was seriously considering like passing out some business cards to those D&D players, some Fear the Boot business cards. But I kind of got this thing against chilling to a captive audience. You know?
I show up in my Fear the Boot shirt, yeah, my no, Fear
so
the Con shirt.
No, so that's passive advertising. That's
an interesting point, though, because one of the things that when I started making contact with these people that I didn't really want to, you know, start dropping was
play the FTB card.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't want to play. Don't want to play that card. Don't want to play. Don't want to play. Oh, I've written in the industry card and all. You know, you don't want to do it because all of a sudden it comes across like, wow, I'm going to be gaming with Super Douche. You know, oh, I guess I'm busy that Sunday.
Yeah, you want to hide that fact.
You know, and, yeah, and you granted, know. With one of the guys, I did drop the Fear of the Boot card only because he was mentioning Dresden Files RPG. And I said, oh, you know, we had just talked to Fred Hicks, da-da-da, and that I felt was an okay enough reference. I kept it brief. But yeah, absolutely. You know, you do, when you make that initial contact, you got to be really careful about the extent with which you lay yourself out there.
Well, I completely agree, Chris. I mean, if all of us, you probably have the most industry chops because you've written for several different companies. You've got another book in the works now. I don't know if I can talk about, so I'll just leave it at that. And then you're also, of course, on this show. And yet I would never lead with that because that is so...
It's pretentious.
Oh, it's beyond.
Even if it's not pretentious.
Don't you know who I am? I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. That's
even not including that, if you're a regular player in a regular group and this guy that you're looking at coming in, you find out he has a podcast, you have to consider... Is this guy going to be talking about us and our game every weekend?
Yeah.
How much of what, we do.
Yeah.
Sorry,
because
Dave.
We do. I mean, how much of what goes on around the table is thousands of people going to hear the next day? Do you have to be careful what you say because it's going to end up getting recorded?
I mean, have you guys ever known any of like the really exhibitionist bloggers where they mm-hmm. blog absolutely everything and everyone they encounter with just no interest in privacy or discretion or whatever? And so,
isn't that what Twitter is?
Yeah, but usually Twitter, you talk about yourself more than other people. It's self-indulgent. It's not presumptuous. I mean, it's, well, unless you're just presuming people care about you, but that's the internet in general.
Isn't that what every Twitter user is?
Yeah, including us.
If they didn't care about me, they wouldn't be following me.
All right, so I
got some bad news for you, dude.
I'll just leave it at that.
Is that why I only have 11 followers?
Probably more than I have.
I think our Fear the Boot account has like 300 followers, and I'm pretty sure 75% of them are hot Russian babes who want to hook up with us.
Absolutely.
Yes. You know, the one last thing I do want to mention about this is that, for me, this is actually going to be kind of a move into uncharted waters. Anyone I've gamed with has been at least part of either the core circle or the larger circle I've had for years, and I've always had a good personal relationship with the people I've gamed with for. And this is something for me, even after all these years of gaming, that's brand new, where I'm walking into completely unfamiliar territory and having to get used to a whole new group of people and their various idiosyncrasies and quirks and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm actually kind of looking forward to it in a certain way.
You know, and I'm sure that bears mentioning because, look, I'll put myself in the category. I don't like strangers. In fact, I'm one of those people, I have that weird quirk of I love every single human being on the face of the earth, but damn, do I hate people.
Dan, and think about your group of friends that you didn't get from like family and church. How many of your group of friends have I introduced you to?
A lot of them.
How many people sitting
not,
at
not
this
all.
Table?
I wouldn't say
no,
all.
I would say not all.
No, not all.
Not 100%, but many of them.
Yeah, because I love strangers.
But you know what? And that's what I was going to say is, look, mm-hmm. by avoiding strangers, by not putting yourself out there, yes, you are avoiding the jerks and the idiots, blah, blah, blah. But you are also avoiding some really cool people that could turn out
like
to be
me.
That could turn out to be some really great lifelong friends.
Chad,
like,
there's no avoiding you.
No, there is no avoiding you.
You're avoiding people like Pat.
Mm-hmm. thanks, Pat.
Yeah.
Thanks,
Steve. Anytime.
Awesome.
Yeah. At this point, I could probably just go on record and say, actually, there is no pad. It's just a soundboard. He actually died after the first episode, and we've just been remixing in little tidbits he said in that one episode. Except
it's kind of like Roger Ebert's voice thing there. We just kind of spliced all of Pat's words together.
Yeah, that's about right. There's this one time in the electric fence.
Cow patties.
All right.
I love you so much, Pat.
Who doesn't love Pat? I mean, really, come on.
Chad, you had a rant, but this episode has been so freaking scattered as it is, so I think I'm going to push ahead to another topic.
Okay.
You probably don't even remember what the rant was, and that's to my advantage, because this way you can't hijack us back onto it.
Oh,
oh God. Oh, you have no
that
idea.
That sounds like a challenge, sir.
There's an issue we're trying to deal with in our current game, but this is hardly unique to our current game. This is something that I have seen pop up in lots of games all throughout my gaming career. And while the setup we're going to give is going to be in a particular system because we're playing D&D 3.5, this is not something that's limited to a particular system.
I don't think it's even limited to just role-playing games. I've had the same issue in video games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Now, I think there has to be some game aspect for it to be relevant. But yeah, I think that is fair to say it's not just limited to role-playing games. But something I want to avoid before I give the topic here, something I want to avoid...
D&D?
Well, I don't want to hit a point where we don't see the forest for the trees, where we're so busy dissecting one tree. In this system, you could handle it by doing this. Okay, well, la-di-da for that system. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't address the broader concept which you could carry into any game. So, with no further ado, here is the situation we're dealing with. In our current game, Pat is supposed to be playing a character who basically is a soul who can re-inhabit bodies after his death. It's more complex than that, but we'll just leave it at that.
He's not a very nice man.
No, he's not a nice man. But as of this game, he is on his 18th lifetime.
Yeah. So I'm like a 1,000-year-old soul.
We actually
that's
rolled
had
that.
18 lives.
Pat asked me how many times has he jumped through a life, and I'm like, I'll shoot a d20. We'll see what comes out.
I rolled because we were saying one of the things about it was is some of the background of the character is you roll a d20. If it's above a 15, then you'll know that it's the dark secrets that the normal people don't really know. And I rolled it and I came up with an 18. So I'm like, wow. So this guy's been around a long time.
So you've been around a long time.
Almost as long as Chris.
Your character is a wizard who,
yes,
in the Vancian magic system, which is based on memory and knowledge and such, should come into life insanely powerful. I mean, if someone can reach epic levels in one lifetime, on your 18th.
Yeah. It wasn't like he picked up wizardry on the 17th lifespan.
Right.
Yeah. He picked it up on the first.
Yeah.
And has been improving.
That's the whole point of these beings.
Let's even move away from that example. Let's move into a completely different game. Let's say we're playing a Savage Worlds game where we are all a party of soldiers in a sci-fi army.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we have the group template set up, three or four of us are supposed to be greenhorns.
Right.
And one of us is supposed to be the experienced veteran who's 10 years older than the rest of the guys. They're all 18. You're 30. And he's been out there. He's seen the elephant, all that crap. Yet on paper, you are all the exact same power. Pat's character in the D&D game, who should probably be like a 50th level wizard, is level 3.
Yeah, I can cast second level spells.
And even regardless of what the other characters in the game are level wise, I mean, it's the same thing. Let's say your character background says, I was an epic warrior in this war. I've done this, this, and this. Yet you start off the game, whether it be a role-playing game video, whatever, you start off the game at level 1 fighting mice and town guards.
It's not even a balance issue. Like, the greenhorn and veteran thing.
I fought dragons. Oh my god, there's a snake!
Yeah. It's not a matter of balance that we're talking about here. It's a matter of plausibility and believability. Yeah.
It's that your backstory says a certain thing about where you should be at in life. relative to the world, relative to the party, mm-hmm. relative to the baseline of the system. And yet your character comes out of the gate a particular way. Yeah. And for whatever reason, okay, now there's a couple solutions. Solution one.
Just make him level 18.
Yeah,
and
make him level 18.
Personally, I don't have a problem with that.
Well, and
one of the other concepts I like is that they've lost that. Something happened and they don't have all of their abilities or skills, or they were injured.
Let's start with making them a separate power level.
Right.
That whatever the system you're talking about, they just
more
get
advancement
more
points. They just have more experience. Yeah. And what happens then is that you get into the games where it is a balance question, but you have to find out what the group wants. I mean, you're talking about Superman and the Shoveler in a party together again. And for some people, that's a big problem. We ran into that problem with this game when you were playing your ogre and Dave was really powerful. And it wasn't a matter of I couldn't challenge you guys. It was a matter of I could throw something at you that would challenge two of the players, but murder two of the other players.
Yeah, exactly.
Or I could play something that would challenge the two weaker players, but they wouldn't even have to do anything because they wouldn't even get to them because the two really powerful players would sweep them off the board.
And I will say, I think you can have some great role playing regardless of power level.
Totally.
But it does take something away from the game when one guy is just the dominating presence. Right. Everybody else exists completely in his shadow.
It either makes it boring for person that's doing it or everybody else. Either the other players get bored because this guy's wiping the walls with everything and he's enjoying wiping the walls with everything, or that guy gets bored because there's no fun. He just is, it's all on him all the
time.
But
you know what? That scenario only exists in combat oriented games.
I don't think it does, and here's why.
I think it could go with skills as well.
Yeah, because I can do the exact same thing with social skills, contacts, equipment.
Well, the reason I say that is because what you're talking about is success. It's a matter of whether it's combat to hit and damage, whether it's making skill rolls and checks, something like that. You're talking about one character 75% of the time is going to succeed, whereas the other character is going to succeed 99% of the time. And then there's that unbalance of is that fair, is that not fair? And what I'm saying is if you have a game where those kinds of successes aren't the push of the game, who cares if you get those successes where it's the story, it's going through the story, is the major, major push of the game? I don't think it's that big of a deal. But if the game is a game where it is combat and it's a lot of roles and it's a lot of utilization of skills and equipment and contacts and resources, all of that stuff is mechanical. And so we're talking about a mechanical definition of a character here.
Well, and I think that's a big part of it, though, too. And I know that... Mm-hmm. That's the mechanical aspect is not your favorite part of role playing. Your favorite part is like what you're talking about. It's the story part. Mm-hmm. It's the independent of combat. It's
story
the independent
the
role of
playing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's independent of the mechanics and the power level of it. And that's totally mm-hmm. cool. But I think, especially in our audience, I think that the majority of the players, this is going to apply to them and to the majority of role players.
Yeah.
Even beyond our audience.
It's just like anything else. I think that there's a small vocal minority that does narrative, non-combat, those types of games.
Sure.
I think that there's a very strong vocal minority that does heavy combat, heavy intensive tactical role-playing games. I think everybody else plays a mixed bag.
Sure, absolutely.
You know,
and one thing when you talk about mechanics, you always seem to go straight to combat, which makes sense because systems are mostly combat.
Yeah.
I love mechanics outside of combat.
I wish that there were more mechanics.
I love social mechanics. I love rolling dice. So I like having a chance to do skill checks and things.
That's why we talk about this is a little bit of a tangent, big surprise for me. That's why when we talk Skies of Glass, one of the mechanics we put in there is stuff that isn't roll dice to hit, roll dice to damage, and then roll dice to make your bluff check. We want to put in additional mechanics that don't have anything to do with any of that, that don't have to do with combat, getting to combat, or getting out of combat. It's stuff that has to do with like farming and building a town and making your character grow as a person and things like that.
But I mean, getting back on the point, wouldn't you have some of these social differences as well with a character that's been around all of this time? You would expect they would have higher social skills as well.
Think about a vampire game where, say, you're just playing a total LARP and total narrative game. You have one character who is a brand new vampire who's just made that day, and then he was made by the prince of the city. And those two role play together.
I was thinking as well of a game like Shadowrun, where at Shadowrun, you can actually purchase contacts with cash, and particularly during character creation. Out of character creation, it's a little bit different. But if I'm supposed to be playing a guy who's been around for a while, has worked his way up the corporate ladder, and you're brand new to the scene, there are problems where you're going to have to use your wits and resources and whatever to solve. And my character, just by the very nature of who and what he is, can solve them with a phone call.
Yeah.
And
you know what? We had that. We had a game that we played with what's his name, where we were sort of paranormal investigators. His character was a DA. So we're like,
he was trying to solve this paranormal mystery.
It was a haunting, and so he calls the police and starts a crime scene.
What do you want them to do? But you know, this leads into another possible solution, which I think can work, but I'm not a big fan of, and I'll give you the reason why with an example. Several years ago, I was running a Star Trek game. There was a particular guy playing in the game whose name happened to be Jim. And no, he was not playing the captain. And
I don't get it.
Okay. But what he...
Dan, never press that soundboard button again.
I won't. What he wanted to... what he wanted to play was a character who was from the Q Continuum, but he was implanted with the crew and basically had this stipulation on him that if he drew on any of those powers, his character base could be exterminated by the Continuum or something like that.
Now, that actually sounds like a really cool concept.
Well, wait a minute. So hold on.
Let's do the timeout here.
Okay, there's a problem with this concept.
There's an obvious problem.
Yeah, it's a really cool concept, except you have all these mechanical powers that you can never use, and then you have this really deep, rich, interesting background that's totally internal to the character that can never be revealed.
Well, and let's do the good old reductio ad absurdum here and just follow this through. Why would you want powers you're never going to use?
To use them, of
exactly. The answer is you don't. You want a power that you're getting under the GM's radar with the story that maybe you yourself at the moment even fully believe you're never going to use. Because I have played characters who have a backstory that never comes up in the game, but it's still fun for me to know I'm playing this. It just feels cool to me, even if it never comes up.
A good way to have dealt with that very easily is just have him stripped of his powers.
Well, hell, I mean, we do this all the time in video games. Chad and I are constantly imprinting stories on the video game that go above and beyond the story of the game.
You know, I was wondering if anyone else did that, because I've done that all the way back to Mario Brothers. I have big,
can't say I went that far.
Yeah.
even playing Mario Brothers as a kid, I had big, elaborate stories going on because the stories that were in the games back then just weren't deep enough.
See, I don't implant stories on games that already have a story, like Final Fantasy. Like Final Fantasy V or even Super Mario Brothers, because there's an inherent story there. Legend of Zelda, there's an inherent story going on.
But XCOM?
Oh, XCOM, where there should be a story. Or even like Civilization, like the sort of historical story of this fictional realm that I'm playing. I do it in Total Annihilation, although it is a good game. I do it in the Total War series all the time. Because it's just like, what is this commander thinking? What is he doing with this army? You know, why is he making this mistake?
I constantly do that in strategy games like that.
I did that in World of Warcraft, because that plot was so thin anyway.
And so, well, here's the point, though, that you can have a character who is toned down because even though he ought to have powers A through Z, he can't actually use any of them or can't use most of them. The problem that I found with that is invariably, when the pressure is up high enough, they're going to use the powers.
Yeah.
That no matter how many agreements you have, no matter how many threats you make, no matter how many handshakes you do, when the heat is on, if the powers are there, the players will use them. Now, maybe in somebody else's group, they've got a guy who really is true to his word, who really does enjoy teasing himself or tantalizing himself, but never going for it. I've never seen it.
My problem with that is that character's a one-hit wonder. Neat character, and I'll give you the power. I don't care if you have that power. You want that power to make this game better for you? That's fine. You've got it. But with all those stipulations, you're a one-hit wonder. You do it once, everybody's like, oh, wow, and then the Q Continuum comes and kicks your ass, but you have to arrange it so that he can keep playing his character, Well, now everybody knows, and all the mystery and the fun is gone from the character. Now he's just a normal dude.
In your particular example, I think you're missing an opportunity to have some real strong character development and still put a little bit of a control on Pat's character's inherent abilities because of his age. When you have a situation like that, if he's on all these various lives where he's gone through everything and he retains a portion of what he's got, the transfer to that new body has got to be traumatic in some way, shape, or form, and it's got to be debilitating.
Traumatic to the person who was inside the body before.
That's well, right. Exactly. And so you've either got a situation where the trauma of the long-lived entity going in there is causes him to not necessarily remember everything, but some of that stuff does come back over time and allows you to drip some of that out.
Here's my problem, Chris, with that. And it has nothing to do with your example, because your example is great. You're absolutely correct. That's a great example. My problem with this thing is this whole concept we're dealing with here of basically a 1,000-year-old guy who's level 3, or the 30-year-old guy who is...
With the 18-year-old recruits.
With the 18-year-old recruits who has veterans of all these wars, is that you make excuses. You do these character tweaks and you make these excuses and you put these little tweaks in there of when he transferred hosts, it drained him and it messed up his mind. The veteran has seen too much and he's a little shaky and he's got some PTSD and he's not as good. The old guy is, you know, he's the old veteran, but he has arthritis and he's shaky and stuff. Or, you know, the old vampire is haunted by his deeds and whatnot. All those things, they get old after a while.
You know,
I don't want to put all of these tweaks in every single character that follows that concept of, gee, I want to play a guy who's a veteran and maybe he's seen some stuff and that affects him in a certain way, but you know what? He's still a pretty good dude.
Well, I agree. And you can do hand waving
only so much before it just becomes stupid.
Well, when you decide to abandon that hand waving stuff, then I think that decision for that player to want to play something like that, and if you're going to go, you know, flat out, particularly in a case where you're looking at somebody who's a military veteran with a bunch of recruits, you got to get the other players to have that buy-in. Yes, you as the player who wants this veteran and the GM can agree to do it this way, but because you're going to do it that way, you're now affecting everybody at the table, and they should have some sort of say in how that's going to go, because it's going to affect their fun.
Yes, Chris, let me back up a point and agree with what Chad was saying, and then I'm going to agree with your final point.
You're just so agreeable.
You're very flexible.
Well, yes, but in process, I'm disagreeing with Chris's original point. So.
Oh, excellent.
I just stated it in a very positive manner.
There you go.
But the fact is that, Chad, I think you're absolutely right. When you look at any character, you can find some hand-waving excuse to balance them out to a point. But in my mind, I completely agree that I think in some cases it works, in some cases it doesn't. In every case, especially over the career of a role player, it starts to get old. Mm-hmm. It becomes less believable because, we've got yet another guy who's the best sniper in the world who either doesn't have maxed out skills because he's got to be in balance with the rest of the party, or whatever the case
we
is.
We have another 1,000-year-old elf who can't hit a tree with an arrow.
Yeah, because he's only second level the rest of the party. And so this really starts to get to be mind-bending. And I agree with you. I think there comes a point where in some situations, yes, you can pretty believably hand wave it away, but in others it doesn't work. But Chris, I think you hit the nail on the head. And as I was mulling this problem in my head prior to recording.
When do we get to the part where we disagree with Chris?
I just did.
Oh, did we?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention.
I wasn't either, so back that sucker up.
It wasn't that good.
Do you ever feel like no one listens to you?
What?
Not when I look at the download stats. No.
Yeah.
Sure, I know.
But that'd be like 75% dead air time of the end the episode if no one listened to Dan. Yeah.
You know, the whole time we were talking about characters that have this concept, and I was reminded back to City of Heroes, where I made a character once that was a vampire, and I play mostly solo, so I reached the obsessive point with the character that I wouldn't take the character out into the sunlight. I would hop into a door mission.
Stop, Wayne.
Wayne's Awkward Confession.
And I'd like to thank Necro for giving us that music. Continue.
Anytime the sun was coming out in there, I would hop into a sewer mission. I would hop in a door so I wouldn't be seen. My wife and I actually together made werewolf characters.
You did this by yourself, which...
I did it by myself initially.
The fact that you did it is not bad. You do it to impress people or tell a story, that's one thing. But you did it by
yourself. I did it for me.
Oh, okay.
I did it for my character. But my wife and I, after that, came up with a werewolf concept.
Okay, I do think that I've heard this story before, and I do think this is a
pretty cool
story.
My wife and I went out. Right away, we had everything we needed to get a second costume. So we have two costume slots on the character. We bind a key to do basically a howl and a costume switch, which later on they added that into the game. So we have one costume that is a werewolf costume, one costume that is a regular human costume, and anytime we were outside of the game was nighttime when we saw the moon, we would hit the button to switch the characters to werewolves, or anytime we were in a mission inside, we would switch to werewolves and we would only fight in werewolves.
Did they actually and only have walk a moon cycle? Like waning and waxing?
Well,
it's a day and night, it's just full moon all the time.
It's a day and night cycle.
Yeah, and in some zones you can see the moon better than others, all right, so we walk around with it.
Where I'm going to agree with Chris...
You're a huge nerd.
I know.
I love it.
But my wife is too, so I guess
you know,
okay.
Actually, to me, that's a really cool story. I would love to have that kind of story with my wife, but I don't. We just have sex all the time.
That's not what I hear.
So, where I'm going to agree with Chris is... As I was rolling this around in my head, the one best thing I came up with is you've got to work with the other players. Because
no, you don't.
Well, all right, and let me start on the train of thought got me there and explain a problem I think you could hit and then work towards a solution. As I was thinking this over, I'm like, how in the past have we balanced something like that? If I'm supposed to be the best sniper in the land, how do I keep somebody else from using the exact same rules that I have access to?
Do you know how we balanced that in the past? Because the people who were trying to be the best sniper, the most powerful mage, the superpower being, were just twinking out their characters, mid-maxing for the power and giving you a 3-sentence write-up on background just to justify the existence of those maximum stats. And we said, no, you reroll.
Actually,
that's how we balanced it.
We had something better than that. My parents had a movable type stamp kit, and we just took this movable type stamp kit and arranged the letters hard ass onto it. And somebody made a shallow hard ass character. We just take out an ink pad. Yep, take this movable type stamp the ink, stamp the sheet, and pass it back to them.
Like, I've been victim of the hard ass stamp before.
This character was rejected as a hard ass. A speak and spell would say wrong. Try again. Character. What you can do is, if I'm supposed to be the veteran soldier and you guys are the newbies, is you can make an agreement. Say, look, the highest I can get in the relevant skills, whatever those may be, tactics, military history, shooting a gun, whatever they are, I'm going to put mine up here. You guys should keep yours lower to keep this consistent. But you know what? You cannot dictate that to the other players if they're not on board with it. Now, the other problem I see in that...
Let me ask you guys a question. With our current game, which we've been talking about ad nauseum, so I think our audience knows a little bit about it. If I came to you guys and said, Pat and I have been talking, we want to make his character level 10 while you guys are level 3 within 3.5 D&D, how would you feel about that?
Level 10?
Yeah.
I don't know. If you said let's take him up some levels, I actually don't think I would bother, right?
Yeah, like to level 5.
Yeah, 5, 6, 7.
But to me, level 5, you're 1,000 years old. Level 5 is still nothing.
Yeah. You know, and honestly, I know Dan had a problem with the characters having powers they're not using. If you approached us with that and said, but it's in his character concept that he's not using all this power that's holding back.
Yeah, I sold you guys the character
like
makes
that
sense
idea.
And he's cool and all this
I like
stuff,
that idea, and I don't have a problem with it eventually coming out. Because I do have a problem with the character having all this supposed power, but their sheet doesn't actually show that. Because when that situation comes up, then you have to, you know, suspend disbelief and say, this character's about to die and they're still going to hold back. No, if things get absolutely as bad as it's going to get, they're going to do that, and then they're going to pay the consequences, like the cue in that story you were telling.
Yeah, exactly.
That sounds wonderful to me. I would love to see that concept, and I would love to see, you know, what happens when he does do that. I would be playing the game waiting for that to happen.
What about you, Pat?
Well, my take on this is that I just don't think that you should do it. And what I mean by that is all these games that you play are meant for the characters to start at the same level set. I mean, you know, depending on what class you are, you're all starting out as whatever level you decide on. Maybe you start at level 0 or 1, whatever, or maybe you start at level 3 like we
or
did.
Or whatever the character creation
point is that everybody's... You're not supposed to have veterans. You're not supposed to have the best sniper. I'm not supposed to be playing a 1,000-year-old mage. You're supposed to start out at the same level set. So you shouldn't do... I just don't think you should do it. Now... With that in mind, and I've noticed this because I've been thinking about one thing.
Okay, go ahead. The reason why I don't like that is because I don't like the idea of the game mechanic.
And I was just okay. And right game now, here's the thing. And I was thinking about this because I've been thinking back because at this point I have
you
now
press the soundboard button more, Dan.
I have now I have now played in 3 different games of yours, starting out
with mine
that you have run, and that counts the rotating GM. It's one of those. I know. But and when I think about that, I thought back about the characters that I made in each of those 3 games, and they were all 3 very powerful, very cool characters. The first game that we played was the sort of the Shadowrun-ish type thing.
You bastard.
And I played that.
It was a cyberpunk game.
Well, cyberpunk. And I played this guy that was basically the head of a corporation or way up in there. Yeah. I had all this power. You know, it was monetary and social, whatever else like that. So I had all this inherent power. But I wasn't really using it. I was trying not to. Then the next thing, even the character in the rotating GM, sort of the same thing. I was another mage, which I don't know why I play mages all the time because I don't really like them. But I had this, not only was I a mage, I had killed this big bad of the game. Yeah. And I had like sucked his soul into my body. So he was inside me. So I was this
uber
powerful character again.
And it's funny for me to hear you say you don't like mages because I've seen you in only 2 fantasy games.
I know.
Both of them. You're playing the mage with the deep, dark secret that you're keeping from the rest of the party.
And it's not really like me. I did played some mages in the past, but not really like this. And it's not my favorite character. But anyway, I realized what I've done is it's in your games and you are a story game player, and it's because we came up with these cool ass ideas. This character class, the elders, they're freaking cool. It's a great thing. And I'm like, how am I not going to be drawn to that and play it? But that's the problem, is that when you get to the mechanics of it, it's like, okay, I am one of these guys. I really shouldn't be a player character in this game. Should not be one of these things. Okay. It's way too powerful. I'm trying to play a player character with these other people. It just doesn't fit in.
I do take one issue with something you said early on, that you shouldn't have this vast power level within your group. What if, given Dan's example earlier, what if you're playing a game of vampire and one person is the sire of another? What if you're playing a superhero game and one person wants to be the sidekick of another?
I've never played vampire, those, so I don't really...
What if I want to play the game?
I've never experienced that, and I don't know, but I would think that in those games that they have the mechanics around that sort of mesh that together a lot better.
Well, and let me finish out the thought that I was building earlier, which is, I think the wrong way to handle this with buy-in from the other players is to simply diffuse your points. Let's say you're playing a Savage Worlds game. I'm supposed to be the veteran soldier. You guys are supposed to be the greenhorns. So we make an agreement that you will not take any combat skill above, I don't know, a D6 or D8. But I can take mine up to a D10 or D12. But the thing is, you are going to end up with extra points that you're going to spend elsewhere, which is fine. I mean, of course you would. But I think that really does not solve the problem, because now, okay, I'm this veteran soldier. You guys have a broader diversity of skills, and this is equally difficult for suspension of disbelief, because I'm 30, you're 18, and you could explain you don't have a lot of combat skills because you've been doing other things while growing up. What I didn't do other things while
right,
I was growing
yeah. how,
up.
How do you have, how do you, these youngins have more breadth of skill than you?
And so I think the buy-in has to be one of 2 things, that either you have to say, either we're just going to do the suspension of disbelief and hand wave it, and maybe that's okay for your group. For me, it's generally okay, but I'm getting a little tired of it. Maybe the next thing you do is we say, okay, this one guy's just going to be more powerful.
Yeah,
we get 10 character points, he gets 25. And as long as we're all okay with that, and as long as it is designed very carefully so this guy does not dominate the game to the point the rest of us might as well just phone it in, then that might be all right.
Yeah,
or on the flip side, maybe it's just we say, look, that's the level we're going to play at. Pat's going to be an elder, and he's going to be some 25th level wizard, and so the rest of us just make something at an epic level as well.
There you go. Yeah, you've got to match.
And there'd be a big risk if that person was the min-maxer or the power gamer in your group, giving them the extra points. That would scare me.
I was going to say that point too, because I think if you do what Dan said there and just have a guy that just You know what? You are. You're 5 to 10, whatever levels higher than everybody else. Your responsibility as the player that's doing that is so paramount. Well, you have to not be a douche. You've got to be a good player and not abuse that. And I think that's hard. That would be hard for me to do.
I'm just amazed we're talking Chad down. I think the hat's snapping his charisma.
I know.
My fingers are bleeding from punching the Pat soundboard.
Now, hold on, Chad. I've got one more point I wanted to make.
I feel like the fan of the opera trying to outplay George Thorogood. I'm just going to keep amping it off.
That's it. I'm switching this to Ted Nugent. I like to look at it from an even further pulled back perspective, because when I GM, I try to GM a more story thing, but I also GM mixed games because the people I GM for aren't really into the story hippie games. So I try and give a blend of what I want and show them what I want, and then I also give them what they want. But that's beside the point. Something that Dan said is that you have to make sure that that one player does not dominate. And from my perspective, I think that's true. That's a very true statement. But there is also some responsibility incumbent upon the other players not to let themselves be overshadowed. And what I mean Absolutely. By that is it's a role-playing game. There's great many aspects to it other than just combat or contacts or skills or money or whatever that the other players need to make deep, interesting, well-thought-out, well role played in characters so that their characters are just as cool. I mean, when I think of,
and I agree with you, but I think there is a point where
you have to
the other guy's so powerful that no amount of proactivity on my part is going to change.
Well, and if it's not that, Dan, what happens is that situation then gets old because if the other players are really actively working to make sure that dominating player or character doesn't dominate, that can get tiring after a while.
It depends on the game, too. I mean, if you're talking a game like straight up Dungeons & Dragons, and the fighting or the combat or whatever role-playing game, the skills, the whatever, however the guy is shining, is a major aspect of the game. And every game system, you're sitting there, and the other players, it comes to combat time. We'll say you're playing a combat powerhouse, and everybody else is normal. Well, the combat powerhouse sits there, and he does this thing. I remember early on when we gave that analogy of the game we played with Mike, who, of course, has run much better games since then. We were in Ravenloft, and it was Tor de Realm. We were like third or fourth level characters, first level characters in a 15th level setting, and we had an NPC who was 20th level walking us around the setting, introducing us to all these crazy people, and then he kills them, and in combat we just watch him
and
kill
hide.
Them. And we hide, and then in the role-playing situations, we have to stand behind him, let him do the talking. I mean, it was GM masturbation. Well, the same thing could be true. You don't want to turn it into player masturbation. And so, you know, the GM has to be, well, you know, Pat's all about that, but
yeah,
the GM... Hey. The GM has to acknowledge that and not let that happen. The player who is the powerful player, or the players who are the powerful players, have to acknowledge that. And the people who are the non-powerful players, or the normal players, have to acknowledge that as well. And they have to make strong characters. I mean,
you know, and that character, you have to watch that it doesn't become basically a gimmick.
Look at
that. This character has no personality. It's not actually a character. It's just a +5 when everyone else is a +2.
Look at Iron Man. I mean, Iron Man's really freaking powerful. He's freaking Iron Man, right? He's got this super technological suit. Well, what about the people who are there with him? Pepper Potts, the bodyguard guy, forget what his name are.
Happy.
Happy and Pepper Potts. You think those characters are afraid to get in Tony Stark's face and tell him to shut up and sit down? But those are strong, good characters, you know? And that's how it should be.
In the comic books, Pepper has her own armor. It's called Rescue Armor.
I can't argue
armor.
That because yeah, and part of the reason why, of course, that particular situation exists and why that certainly is translatable to a game is because the Tony Stark player, his character has strong emotional attachments to those two, and he isn't going to unleash a blast on either one of them for, you know, either shouting him down or contradicting him or, you know, setting him straight.
Let's face it, though, in a role-playing game, typically you're not going to have someone playing Happy Hogan, someone playing Pepper Potts. You're going to have the Avengers instead. You're going to have someone playing Iron Man, someone playing Thor, someone playing...
Well, and hold on. If we wanted to continue that analogy, what I would say is this. And I don't know why suddenly we've gone from D&D to Iron Man, but hey, let's run with it. So let's say you're playing an Iron Man game, and Chad's playing Iron Man, and Wayne's playing Happy, and Pat's playing Pepper Potts.
Yeah.
Just because that's what he does
every night. I know what I'm doing tonight.
I'm not waiting till tonight. I'm doing it right now.
But
let's be back in the corner moaning.
I roll the city's Pat.
When the big bad comes out.
I'm happy with myself.
Don't worry, Chris. You can play War Machine.
When Mandarin comes out on the field, there is nothing Happy or Pepper Potts is going to do. And if you've got a game that's occurring at that level, these two characters could become irrelevant, except one thing. What does Tony Stark need most out of them? He's falling apart.
Yes.
And this is where I get into another possibility, which is what you can do is, okay, let's say this game is occurring at, on a scale of 1 to 10, this is supposed to be at a power level of a 5. Mm-hmm. But somebody wants to play a character who exists at a 10. Now, I realize this can also end up right back where we started in tiresome hand waving. Mm-hmm. But what you could do is start cutting deals and say, okay, I will let you buy your way up to that 10, but you are then going to take -5 penalties. So your net balance still comes back to that 5. So you have the Iron Man armor, but you're also a raging alcoholic who's dying from 3 different kinds of internal poisons and has a wrecked personal life and loathes himself and all
this. And syphilis.
And these are all things that you cannot get around in the game. They are mechanically to come back at you. Let me go back to a different analogy, which would be the XCOM games that we used to play. I think there comes a point where role-playing gets around stuff, but no amount of pointing at storytelling, I think, is going to totally solve this, because of the fact that at the end of the day, 99.99% of RPGs occurring out there still have that game element. They still have a system. And when I would go into the character editors on XCOM or XCOM Apocalypse and make my group of friends, like everybody did with those editors,
you know,
I could take somebody and say, okay, I know this guy is actually in real life a pretty good shot, so I'm going to start him at a 70% shooting skill. But the fact is, if I take someone up to that 100%, no amount of role playing is going to get around the fact that
this guy is the best in the world,
and when you put him out, he's broken. When you put him out, it breaks down the role-playing, because at some point, the game takes over from the story. That's just the way it works. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. No matter how much we may wish that wasn't true, that game kicks in, and this character, he's just dominating. There's nothing on the field that can threaten him.
You know what? And there's nothing wrong with using the previous example in your guys' current game. You know, Chad, why not give Pat the spell casting ability of a 10th level wizard?
But
physically, all of his physical traits and all that still reflect his current level. So yeah, he may be able to really lob some serious damage, but at the same time, physically,
he still doesn't have hit points.
Yeah, he has proportionally much less and a level to match everybody else in the party.
He still has the hit points of a level 3.
Chris, that's not a +1/-1 trade. That's a +1/+0 trade. We'll give you 10th level spell casting, but in every other regard, you're equal to the party. I get where he's coming from.
Basically, he's homebrewing the system. House-ruling the system, yeah.
You're minding the rules to fit your game and where you want to come from.
Now, me personally, what I love to do, and I tell all my guys this every time I run a role-playing game, and my old group used to take me up on this all the time, and I loved it. My new group, a little bit too much paranoid. I have too many veteran players here who've seen too much over the years.
I don't know. I think in this game, we all of us took you up on it.
Yeah.
Except for Dan.
I always say that I want to cut a deal. I always love cutting deals. You want something more out of your character? You want something significant? I'll make you a deal. And I did actually cut a deal with Pat. Pat can cast spells that he should not normally be able to cast, and there's like a poker chip thing. He has 3 poker chips, and when he can hand me one, and then he can cast a big boom
So are we actually going level independent on those? Because that's not the way I looked at it. So maybe
I'm
playing
around. Do you want to go level independent?
The way I was looking at it.
I'll make any deal you want.
Pat, the one time you used it, I think the spell you used is not one you're capable of using.
It is, actually.
Oh, it is? Okay.
And my original idea was I wanted to have a little bit of a sorcerer type spellcasting ability.
I don't have to memorize it.
I know the spell, I can cast it. And the one I used was, it was a spell that I have. I just hadn't memorized it, but I needed it. So I'm like, here's the chip, because I want to be able to do this spell that I don't have memorized.
And then I take the chit, and what I use it, I can spend it back to him, and he can only have as many as three, and I can only get as many as three from it. I can spend them back to him. And what it is that there's these elder ghosts running around, and it's one that doesn't like him.
What I think really the sort of concluding advice here is, we've thrown out a whole host of possible solutions. Hand-waving why the person can't use the powers, hand-waving the story reasons of why everyone looks similar, pretending they have powers they don't have, giving them extra levels that other people don't have and agreeing upon that amongst the party. I mean, we've thrown out a host of solutions. And while I think we have been fairly accurate in pointing out the problems of each one, I think they are all still workable in the right situation. I think in most issues we discuss, there is never a one-size-fits-all solution. But I think in this issue, 10 times so. This is one of those things that you really have to look at in the context of the story, the system, the history of the group. And in truth, there probably is no ideal solution. But if you want to do this, if you want to have a guy whose background says he should be something the rules either will or will not reflect, either way, you have to look through this list of options and pick the one that is the most passable and most plausible within your game, accepting that there's going to be some problems, there's going to be some risk to the flow of the game by doing it, which is why, truth be told, I think the easiest way to get around this is don't be there. Just make a character who fits in with the rest of it. And I didn't say that's the only way. Yeah. I just said I think it's the quote unquote safest way. And the way I typically handle it personally is when we play a game, I'll ask the game master, okay, what's the setup? What's the general power level? And I make something that fits it. I don't even go there. So we don't have to worry about hand waving and getting buy-in from the other players. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm not saying this is something you must avoid at all cost. I'm just saying, look, the best fight's the one that you're not there for.
I don't know. I don't think it's this big consternation thing. I think that there needs to be a consensus. Is this cool with everybody?
Right. I agree.
And if it's cool with the GM and there's a strong character behind it, I think my big thing is I don't have a problem if anybody wants to be powerful or whatever. It doesn't bother me as a GM. I want a good story. I want a good background, and I want you integrated into the story. Well, and I want you integrated in with the group
as
well.
And I agree with you, and I'm not saying this is something that nobody should ever do, our group included. But what I am saying is that I've seen it go wrong far more often than I've seen it go right. And if
I think that I extend something that you say, and I twist it around and I extend it beyond your meaning of it, the only thing a player has is their character. And to me, that means a player should do anything they want to do within reason that they can with the character. If they want to play something like what Pat's playing, something that's really freaking powerful and evil and twisted, group consensus, does it work? Does it have a good story? Is this going to be a good character in this story? If it meets all these criteria, do it.
That's the one check I'd look through too. Mm-hmm. Are they making this character because they want to be the most powerful, or are they doing it because they have a really cool story idea for the character? If they have a really cool story idea for the character, let's find a way to make it work.
I completely agree in that. I would also very much look at the trustworthiness of the player. And I will tell you right now, my willingness to do something like this would very much depend on who's asking.
That's what I said earlier. You've got a huge responsibility as that player if you're going to do that.
It isn't about trust in that respect, simply because if a player is coming into one of my games and they are a twinked out combat machine, they're going to be really freaking bored.
And you're right. That's right. And it's something that you play. That's absolutely correct. But
in a, that in can, a different totally kind of different game,
if,
yeah.
If Dan or Wayne or Dave is running, can run something. Yeah. So, yeah. And that's why I think it really comes back to, like you're saying, it depends on the system. And from like what I've said, most systems out there are really meant for everybody to play the same power level of characters. You start off at the same level.
Whatever
you
do that. Is all
and that's
are,
why my you know. Advice on this is really, like you said, Dan, is probably let's not do this. You might have reason for doing it and you've got a good reason, but I think in general, you just don't need to be playing the veteran characters
and
with
I want to point
the
out,
rest of the newbies.
Well, I want to point out before people start saying, well, you need to play this indie game or you need to play Burning Wheel or you need to play this other indie game.
I would love to play Burning Wheel, actually.
I think I might try and play some at Gen Con. Necronomicon might be running a demo of it. What I think is that when you're talking about power level, you're not just talking about the combat aspect. It could be any mechanical aspect. We are specifically talking about a mechanical aspect here, but it could be any mechanical. It could be skills. It could be attributes. It could be
contacts,
whatever.
Money.
It could, you know, and it could even be a background, non-mechanical aspect. It could be vampire. You are the prince of the city. You are the whatever. I want to play three dudes in the military.
And even
cool.
if there are things
I'm
out
playing
there
that, the commander in chief. I'm the president.
I say, and even if there are things at that level that would threaten you, they're completely irrelevant to the world the rest of the party lives on.
We're playing a mech game, and it's called Metal Wolf Chaos, and I'm the president. It's on.
That's deep.
My God, I would so play that game.
I think that's where we're going to wrap this one up. So thank you guys for tuning in. Be sure to get out there and check the show notes for all the various links and such we have put out there. And tune in next time to see if Fear the Boot will ever conquer the familiar and animal companion topic.
It will.
Not if I can help it.
I'm not betting on that one.
See you later.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.